and welcome to Blog Talk Radio. Find yourself, live your dreams, and be happy.
Show. I'm your host, Yvonne Brown, coming to you live from Chicago, Illinois, as I usually do every second Saturday of the month at 2 p.m. Central Time. Find Yourself, Live Your Dreams, and Be Happy is an interactive live internet talk radio show that focuses on how to take advantage of the opportunities that life sends your way. The program explores obstacles overcome by ordinary people with extraordinary results and what inspires and motivates them to take positive actions that make their dreams a reality. I know a little about that myself, as I've had 10 careers. My first career after arriving in the United States from Jamaica was as a fashion model. Then I was a singer on the MCA label, a corporate consultant for Accenture, and today I'm a professional speaker and trainer, author, blogger, certified professional coach, leadership and confidence coach for Forbes Coaches Council, certified John Maxwell coach, and radio show host. Let's set the tone for today's show. One of my favorite leadership experts, Jack Canfield, said, successful people maintain a positive focus in life, no matter what is going on around them. They stay focused on their past successes rather than their past failures and on the next action steps they need to take to get them closer to the fulfillment of their goals, rather than all the other distractions that life presents to them.
Today's show is brought to you by JAD Communications International. They specialize in personal development, coaching, and training. JAD Communications focuses on improving communications, managing people and expectations, increasing interpersonal skills, promoting respectful communications, and conflict resolution. Visit them online at www.jadcommunications.com and use the contact page to request more information.
We have a fantastic show for you today. Joining us later will be Roy Whitmore. He's the CEO of W Consulting and Mentoring Group Incorporated. He will be taking your calls and questions, so be sure to call us at 646-381-4198. And by the way, if you're listening online and you decide to give us a call, please mute your computer first. Our show today is titled, How Senior Executives Make Decisions When Selecting Senior-Level Direct Reports. During his leadership roles at Target and later at Joel Osco, Roy was concerned with the interviewing and hiring process for management positions. It seemed that minorities and women were often screened out and not hired for a position that they were qualified for, and fully qualified for them, in fact. And in many instances, they were better qualified than the white male that was hired or promoted, though it appeared on the surface that the decision-making process of the hiring executives was biased, and in some cases it might have been. He believed that there was a deeper issue because some of the hiring managers were his friends, and he knew them to be very, very accepting of diversity in the organization, and as such, his research during his doctoral studies focused on identifying not just the decision and the outcome of that decision when selecting leaders, but the actual decision-making process itself, in addition to the leadership perspective when hiring senior direct reports. We will also discuss a little bit his children's book called Wrong, Trump Ethics for All Ages. Now, let me tell you a little bit about him. That's what the show is going to be about. Let me tell you about him. Roy Whitmore is the owner and president of W Consulting and Mentoring Group and AskAscholar.com. He's the chair for the University of Phoenix School of Business Las Vegas campus. He has 30 years of experience in increasing roles of leadership and management success with Fortune 500 companies. Dr. Whitmore was the vice president of operations with an Albertsons company, and in his last role, he directed the successful operation of a multi-billion-dollar business. He earned his undergraduate degree and master's degrees in business from DePaul University. He received his master's and PhD in human development from Fielding Graduate University. And his dissertation, The Use of Heuristics by Senior Executives When Selecting Senior-Level Executive Direct Reports, is one of the most sought-after dissertations. His organization's primary focus is organizational development and human behavior and mental toughness improvement. quite a mouthful. Welcome to the show, Roy.
Well, thank you, Yvonne. Thank you for having me on your show today. I'm really excited to talk with you and to share with your listeners today.
Tell me about your positions at Target and Jewel Opco.
Yes. Target was my first management leadership position, and I grew through the organization, Yvonne, from a store manager trainee to the regional director of stores based actually out of Chicago. I was the leader that opened the Chicago market for Target stores, and that was really exciting for me. Yes, it was really exciting. I'll just show one piece that was most exciting during that opening process. We on the grand opening day, we rented time on every radio station in Chicago, every TV station in Chicago, and we had commercials on every station there at the same time on grand opening day. It was really, really exciting. And Chicago grew to become one of Target's largest markets. I eventually left Target, and we may get into some of the reasons why I left Target. It's pretty interesting, but I want to make sure I don't use up time talking about those kinds of things. But I left Target. I met the Senior VP of Human Resources for Jewel Osco at an event that we were doing with Mayor Daley at the time. We were doing some presentations. And she asked me to come over to Jewel Osco if I ever had the desire, if I ever wanted to leave Target. And eventually I did go over, and I became the regional vice president for Jewel Osco of their, what was called then the North Area. And the North Area was the first time that they had an African-American vice president to lead that area. And we had lots of successes at Jewel Osco. Eventually I was moved for reasons that I didn't really want to move, but eventually I was moved to the South Area. Of Chicago for Jewel Osco, and that was exciting. Actually, it turned out that it was a great move for me because I showed that the South Area, South Side of Chicago, could really outperform the other areas at Jewel Osco. So it was pretty exciting, and we did some exciting things. But yeah, so those were my two roles. At the one at Jewel Osco, I became the vice president for Jewel Osco of operations, and then at Target, the regional director of stores out of Chicago.
Wonderful. Both very demanding positions. What about your
Yes.
Where were the interviewees from, and what were their positions?
Yeah, well, let me just give a little bit of context here about the research, and you talked about it in the opening, your opening comments. Yvonne, one of the reasons I wanted to research this whole interviewing process for executives was to try to understand how some outstanding minority candidates were excluded from promotions, excluded from coming into Target in particular when I was there. Because, as you said earlier, the folks doing the interviewing were my friends, and I saw them as my friend. I didn't see them as being biased or racist and those kinds of things. But for some reason, even if we hired a minority, African-American male in particular, that individual, with the exception of me, that individual would leave Target. So when I started to work on my graduate degrees and my PhD in particular, that was the foremost thing on my mind. I wanted to understand the dynamics, if indeed these executives were not biased or racist or sexist or whatever the terms you want to use. What was going on with the interviewing process? Why were they making the decisions to exclude minorities? This was a really exciting process for me, and it turned out that I did find out the primary reason for it. And there may be some bias, there may be some racism involved, but I found out the overriding reason for their decisions, their systematic decisions to exclude minorities, wasn't necessarily based on race or bias or prejudice.
That's interesting. What was your...
I'm sorry.
No, you go ahead, please.
I was just going to talk a bit about the individual that I interviewed. So I interviewed, started out in Palace Study, I interviewed a number of executives, but during the actual research, I narrowed it down to 13 senior executives, and they were all CEOs, presidents of organizations, EVPs, nothing lower than a C-suite executive, and so they were chiefs or corporate titles. And I had two female, one Latino, one African-American, and the rest remainder were white male. And it was very, very interesting, the results. What there was some surprises, and I'm sure we'll get to those as we go through the interview, but what was one of the amazing things about the results is that even though they were from different organizations, did not know each other, I interviewed them at different times, some of the results of the research and interviews were very similar. I mean, it was amazing how they looked, all these executives, Latino, African-American women, and white males looked through a similar lens at that executive position.
What was your interview protocol, and what types of questions did you ask them?
Well, that's a good question. We started, I think I had about 30 questions, and my research team and my committee said that's way too many. We were kind of directing the responses we wanted from the executives with those 30 questions. And so we narrowed it down to two questions. The first question was, tell me about a time you hired a senior executive direct report and that individual was successful. The second question was, tell me about a time you hired a senior executive and that executive was not successful. Who was involved, and what happened? And from there, there was a rich amount of information and detail that came from those two questions. So each interview, just based on those two simple questions, lasted an hour, and there were a couple that went into 2 hours. The interviews were conducted either in the corporate offices or they were conducted via the phone, but primarily in the corporate offices. But it was interesting that these executives were very open. I mean, they were sincere, open, and I was able to record the results. There was one though, a big organization there, probably not far from where you are in Chicago. One of the big hotel chains. I interviewed the president of human resources, and after the interview was completed, and I was tabulating my results, I got a call from their senior attorney wanted to review the tape before I published my dissertation. And there were some things in there that they probably should have removed.
That's very, very interesting. I'd love to hear about your findings.
Well, there was a vast amount of results that we found, and I won't go into all of it because it would take hours. But I'll try and narrow it down to what matters, I think, to your audience. What we found is that eventually found is that, and you mentioned earlier, heuristics is what they were using to make their decisions, and humans have a limited capacity for sorting through large amounts of data. I mean, that's scientifically proven. And so what we do many times is we take shortcuts. And that's what heuristics are.
Right.
We take shortcuts, we group things together, and we try and understand how to make a decision. My findings revealed a ton, as I said, of usable data for both executive candidates that's looking for a job and for hiring managers that's looking to make that decision to hire someone. My research found that to land an executive position, you must master five key leadership characteristics. And those five we'll talk about in some detail. The first one is a cultural fit. Executives are looking for individuals that can fit into the organization. And the amazing thing about this cultural fit is that they can't really explain what they mean when they say cultural fit. They're looking for individuals that are collaborative, and they use collaboration in conjunction with being a team player. So they kind of use those two together. They're looking for an individual with a leadership style that they try to explain, but they really can't explain it. And we'll talk about it in a little more detail later on in your show about when they say leadership style, what they're thinking. And, again, amazing that they all kind of see through a similar lens. So cultural fit, leadership style, they're looking for collaborative team players, and obviously they're looking for education and experience. And if you can, as an interviewee, someone that's seeking an executive position, if you can qualify in all of those areas, you're probably going to land a job. And here's the I just want to give you one quick example of the proof of that. One of my biggest clients, Ross Stores, that we've worked with since about 2009, and we've placed more than 20, maybe 25 executives at that organization. And all of those executives are there. I think three or four may have left. But we prep them on these skill sets, on these characteristics, and they were interviewed and hired through the first round of interviews.
Wow.
So we know that that we've proven that these are the characteristics that senior executives are looking for, and we prove that with other organizations too, on a lesser scale than we have with the Ross Stores. So if you want to, I can go a little bit more detail on cultural fit, collaboration, teamwork, and so forth. If you're looking to detail those a little bit more, Yvonne.
Yes, I'd love to hear some more about each of those five findings. What is cultural fit? I was looking at some of your research here, and I made a note of a few items that I found interesting that the executives said, like they've got to really understand the culture of the company, and they've got to understand the interaction of the CEO, and they've got to understand the executive team, because really what you're doing when you're trying to put a team together is kind of like building a family.
That's right. That's right. That's very good. These executives are, first of all, they see themselves as having, being a cultural fit in the organization, right? They see themselves as modeling the culture. They see themselves as having this leadership style. And so they're, in a sense, they're looking for individuals that's going to some degree, mirror their behavior. So I would just say that you must be viewed by the hiring manager as a cultural fit. And what is a cultural fit? Well, these executives could not explicitly state what they meant by cultural fit, the ones I interviewed, but they actually make their initial hire for cultural fit based on similarities to themselves. That's really what they're looking for.
I read this one here where the executive said, so someone who I believe is going to have that cultural fit, not so much, I guess, organizationally, but also with my personality.
That's right. That's right. Because they're trying to make sure that they've got someone that's going to, when they're not available or not around, that's going to represent them in the light that they would like to be represented. And so in the interviews, mm-hmm. these executives use words, terms like, you mentioned earlier, you're building a family. They wanted to understand how new executives would represent them when they were not around. However, in my follow-up questions to these executives revealed that they were really seeking individuals that were collaborative, team player, people with positive mental attitudes, strong desire to be on the team. And that was one that they actually want you to articulate in the interview your desire to be on their team. And obviously they were looking for good communicators. So as you mentioned earlier, I'll just read one example. For example, one senior executive said, and this is a quote directed from the individual, and people are complex. Human beings are complex. Some people take tests well. Some people interview well, which is why you really, and he said, and an old friend of mine said, before you hire somebody for a really senior position, see them in three different settings. See them, you know, in your office. See them, I don't know, at dinner. And also see them on the golf course. So I thought when I'm interviewing this individual, you know, I don't really golf. So I may never get hired by this individual if that's the case. And he went on to say that actually I think the latter, the golf course, is the most telling. Isn't that amazing?
Maybe it has to do with having those social skills and the ability to compete and lose gracefully or win gracefully and those kinds of things.
Yeah, I think in this interview, it was this senior executive that was – I was in his office in the corporate office there in downtown Chicago. And I think at one point he forgot that he was interviewing with an African American. He really relaxed and he was just telling all. But I think some of these senior executives lose perspectives in terms of when they're engaged and interacting with minorities, and they think that, you know, some of us golf and we're pretty good golfers, but I would argue that the vast majority of us are not golfers, right? But doesn't mean that we can't be a good executive. And maybe we socialize and we engage in other types of situations better than we do on a golf course. So if golfing is a requirement, being able to be a good golfer and communicate on a golf course is a measure of whether I can get into an executive position, I'm going to be excluded most of the time.
Right.
That's not a strong.
Well, a lot of
strong
people are going to be excluded. All women don't golf either.
Right, exactly.
Leadership?
Go on. I was just going to give you another example of one of the other executives said. It was so interesting, this material, and I'll be happy to share it with others if I give you my contact information at the end. One said, it's a combination of things, Roy. It's part of compassion. How they have dealt with people previously. It's part of their passion for the business and how much they love the retail business, in this case, important. Part of it was their ego, dislike. And so several of the individuals I interviewed were really concerned about individuals coming into the organization with big, high egos. Do they require lots of attention if they've got a high ego? Are they people for whom visible displays of status are important? If they are, they're not going to be a good fit in our organization. This is how they were describing their cultural fit. What's their receptivity to working in a collaborative organization with others? And so consistently throughout the interviews with these individuals, they were using this collaborative word, right? Those are some of the cultural components that's important to our company. And I'm sorry, Yvonne, I kind of cut you off there, but you were getting ready to ask me something.
Well, I was wondering, what do you mean by leadership style?
Yeah, that's a good one. That leads me right into this is another one, right, that all of the executives that I interviewed, and I asked them point blank, right, to describe their vision, their picture of leadership style, and none had in their HR documents any written definition, but they all talked about collaboration again. They used that word. They used individuals with low ego. They used words like passion, strategic thinkers, executive presence. Now, when they said executive presence, the research indicated they were talking about individuals that behave similar to them, right? Their style. So one of the things that's important, we'll talk about it later, I don't want to get too far into it at this point, Yvonne, but one of the things that they're looking for is individuals, if they're absent from the organization and you're representing that individual, they don't want there to be any space between them and you. They want you to be viewed almost as just exactly as the organization would view them. And so it's important that when you are seeking an executive job, that you understand the executive team you're going to be working with, you understand their background, you understand their behavior and those kinds of things, and then you can put together a strategy for interviewing. And that's what we did with the executives that we placed in the organizations that we work with. We helped them to understand that. So, and to help you understand a little bit more about that, one of the executives said, you know, Roy, I think everyone agreed that the top three candidates were qualified for a particular position. And then it came down to whom everyone was comfortable with. And it's funny, Roy, that people that are comfortable with, people that kind of mirror their lifestyle, and people they're comfortable with, that's who they generally select. So you can kind of see them all line up for just the person, just based on kind of the same personality. So they're looking for individuals to display, right, similar personalities, similar behavior. And that can be challenging for minorities, right? We grew up in different cultures, a different environment, different backgrounds. And when we're engaging with executive leaders that's going to hire us, you know, 97%, Yvonne, of these executives that's making the hiring decision, the white male. And that number may have fluctuated a little bit. It may be down to 95 or so, but when we did the research, it was as high as 97% of all the executives in the C-suite. Now, the C-suite are where the decisions are made. Now, if you Google numbers, you're not going to get those numbers because you're going to get numbers that's inflated with management numbers. C-suite executives, corporate executives, executives with the chief title that's actually making the decisions. 97% of those folks in Fortune 500 organizations are white male. And if they're expecting to, and again, just to rest here a little bit, that's one of the reasons that it's a bit challenging. And I never use the word all for some minorities and women to break the so-called glass ceiling, right? Because we've not been engaged and trained to behave in the way that some of these executives think that we should be. And that right. can be certainly a block and can hold us back. But that was extremely – that was interesting to learn about.
So a lot of those are kind of like what soft skills, would you say?
Yeah. So the soft skills are the ones that we've been talking about. The soft skills are the being collaborative, right? The soft skills are the team player. Soft skills are being a cultural fit, and this. It's ironic, and we'll talk about it a bit more, but it's ironic that these executives were hiring based on individuals that they thought were cultural fit, collaborative individuals with the right leadership style. But all the individuals that left these organizations that they hired, when we asked the question, tell me about the time you hired an individual, senior executive, director, board, and that individual was not successful, they all left because they were not team players or collaborative. So they're hiring for one thing, right? The question begs, can we learn to be a cultural fit, right? But irregardless, to get in as a senior executive in an organization, you've got to, at the very least, understand how to pretend that you're a cultural fit and that you have the personality style they're looking for. But to stay in that organization, to keep your job, you've got to be a team player and collaborative. So
yeah, there
are two dynamics at play.
Right. But how do you know, sometimes it's difficult because there's a mismatch, right? The company can say the culture is like X, Y, and Z, but the reality is that the culture is not at all like the words they say or what's in writing, right? So you have to somehow be able to get through that filter and find out what's the real thing that's going on in the organization.
That's right.
You understand what I mean?
Right, right. And I'm glad you brought that up. You kind of pulled me away from my notes a little bit. But generally speaking, when you look at an organization's mission statement and their vision statement, and you go on their website or you visit with them, what's on the surface in terms of what the culture is probably not really what the culture really is. And that's why I always recommend to the individuals, the leaders that I'm coaching or if I'm placing people, I always recommend that we take a real in-depth look at the executive team, at the board members. What's their background? Where are they from? Where did they go to college? You're going to learn more about, you know, what activities do they engage in. You're going to learn more about the real culture of the organization.
Right.
If you can understand those dynamics and their behavior. Because what they post on their website that you know, we embrace diversity and this, that, and the other, it's not necessarily true.
I asked that question based on my own experience because as a consultant myself, from my own personal experience, I know I worked with one consulting firm that they – on their website posted, "Our consultants don't travel," which was why I took the position with that consulting firm. My son was a teenager, and I wanted to be home. And then they changed, and everybody had to travel. And I mean travel from Sunday through Thursday. Fly out on Sunday, fly home Thursday. And I didn't want to do that, so I left the company. And because I wanted to focus on raising my son, and so, but just to check, for years I would go to their website and I would check, and it would still say our consultants don't travel, and I was like, there's nothing like that anymore. They just never updated the website or anything like that. So if you're trying to get a senior position, and you're looking at these five things and you're going, all right, I'm going to prepare by checking out the cultural fit. There's a lot more to it than just what did their marketing or brochure or materials or website say.
Yes, 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 yes. I mean, there's a lot more. And I was coaching a young lady just yesterday, in fact, she just left Comcast, and she was a leader there, and she's now seeking a new position. And one of the things that I was coaching her on is that, you know, don't just look for job openings and make sure you don't just look at the organization's website to try and understand their culture, because you're not going to understand it from what's on their website. You're going to have to do some deeper, broader, more rigorous research to really try and get a sense of the culture of an organization. So besides doing some really deep diving into the leadership team, all the chiefs in the organization, the board members, start to track on LinkedIn and some of the other social sites what the employees are saying. Start to track the employees that are leaving. You can email those employees or call them.
And ask,
you know, why did you leave? If they have brick and mortar sites, visit the sites and walk around in the site as if you were just visiting. And those are the kinds. It's a lot more work, but it's important that you understand the culture of an organization, the real culture of an organization. Let me give you a real example. Actually, with my daughter, she had been with Target for a number of years, and she was getting frustrated because of the direction of the organization, and it didn't seem like they were embracing individuals that were different, and a lot of minorities were leaving the organization and so forth. So, and I said, let's take a look and see where you want to go. Why don't you, just off the top of your head, give me the five organizations you think you'd like to work for based on what you think you know about them. And so she said, well, Costco, Whole Foods, she threw out two or three others, I think a couple others. And I said, well, let's just start with Costco. I said, let's do some deep research into Costco. Love it. I shop there. Great company. But is it a great place for executives, minority executives and female executives? Let's just take a look. So we looked at the board members. We looked at the C-suite executives. And what we found was astonishing. There was one female, and she was in HR. All the rest were white male. And I said, does that tell you anything? This was then 2014. I said, does that tell you anything about Costco in the executive arena? Now, they may treat their employees well in the stores, and they may treat their junior executives, district manager, and they may have some diversity there, but they still, you know, almost 100% of the senior executives are white male, and do they really embrace diversity? I can't believe that in at that time that there's not space and some decision-making positions, chief positions, for females or minorities. It's just the most amazing thing. So obviously she decided not to go there. She ended up going with Ross Stores. She loves Ross Stores, very diverse executive team, and she's in D.C. having a wonderful time, and she's the vice president of operations for the East Coast. And she's so happy she made the move. But you got to do your research. You just can't, just because there's an opening or just because the organization looks okay on the surface, you may shop there or you may visit there, you may have friends that work there. Some of the folks that actually work in those environments don't really understand the culture at the higher levels.
That's true. That's very, very true, because they only see what's within their span of control right there where they are.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And that's and I know you teach that. That's a whole other conversation that I teach in one of my classes about organization culture. You know, how do you change it? And we're not going to get off on that, but we got to get back to collaboration here. And where is it changed? And that's a dynamic where in most organizations to change the culture is changed in that middle rank, right? And usually there's it's not changed from the top down. It's usually changed from the middle. And usually in that middle rank there's a middle executive that's probably more powerful in some cases than the CEOs. And when you and I were talking the other day, we were talking about JCPenney and what happened to that one executive, and we were talking about another organization, Hewlett Packard in Fiorino. One of the things that happened to both of those executives is that they were not able to change the culture in the middle of the organization, and it derailed them. So, but anyway, back to our... So the next, we talked about leadership style. So collaboration, I think we talked about that a little bit. But
We did. What recommendations do you have for people that might be interviewing for an executive position? I know you gave us a little taste of it a few minutes ago with the examples that you presented, but if you had someone who said, I'm going to interview for an executive position, what recommendations would you give that person?
Yeah, very, very good question. It's a lot more complicated than we sometimes take it for. If you're interviewing, understand that you've got these three soft skill dynamics at play, right? You've got you got to be a cultural fit. You got to make sure that you demonstrate that you can be a cultural fit when you're interviewing, and you've got to demonstrate that you have the leadership style that this organization might be looking for, and you have to demonstrate in that interview that you're a collaborative team player type individual. Now, these executives that I interviewed, Yvonne, they all use one method for interviewing, but one primary method when they're interviewing senior executives. They have you tell stories, right? And so it's important that if you're interviewing that you prep to tell two or three stories. One story about being collaborative, being a team player. So there's got to be an event or something that was really successful in your life that you can build a story around. And what those executives are trying to do is trying to assess while you're telling that story if indeed there are some facts in there or some statements in there that can confirm that you're a collaborative, you're a team player. Likewise, when they talk about cultural fit, those executives will have you not only interview with some of their subordinates and superiors to try and assess what they perceive to be a cultural fit, and it could be different in each organization. It will be different in each organization, I should say. But they'll also have you interview with let me back up a little bit. They'll also have their assistants, their secretaries, everyone aware that you're coming, and the way you engage that whole group will help them confirm whether you are a cultural fit for an organization. Now, trying to determine what that cultural fit is a real challenge. Because, as you know, Yvonne, it's different in each organization. And that's why it's so important that you do that research in advance. So bottom line is that make sure you understand the culture of the organization. If you're interviewing for that position, make sure that you do your research. Don't just depend on the Internet. Do more than the Internet. I mean, make phone calls. Go visit. Make sure that you should have the buzzwords for the culture as well, whatever those buzzwords are. And make sure that you understand the personality of the individuals you're going to be interviewing with, right? Again, I go back to, you know, where did they go to school? What's their background? You know, what's the hobbies, if you can find out? If you can go in there and talk about Roy Whitmore, and Roy Whitmore loves to jog, and if you're a jogger, man, you might get in.
Right, but so, nobody's going to find that out. I mean, in my mind, I'm thinking maybe I can go look up the leadership team and then get to find information about members of the leadership team to get that kind of information because the executive suite is kind of separated from the enlisted men, if you will, right?
That's right.
And
that's
so,
right, exactly.
So they're not as easily penetrated and understood as walking around and getting to know people and stuff like that because they're not there. They're in the general's tent.
Mm-hmm.
or the corporate office or something like that. So
that's exactly right.
As part of preparing, what are some other ideas that you could share
to help in that regard?
Here's one. I wanted to just digress just a minute, and I forgot to put this on the table. One of the important things, if you're interviewing for a senior executive position, you need to know yourself, and then we'll come back, Yvonne. But you need to know yourself, and what I mean by that is that you can't change yourself if you don't know yourself, right? If you don't know what your strengths are, if you don't know what your developmental needs are. And so to try and adjust yourself to fit into a particular culture is going to be challenging if you don't know how others view you. So there are five factors that most executive organizations are trying to assess for. And I work with Wonderlic. I'm sure you've heard of them. WNDER. It's actually in the Chicago area. And they have what they call a Big Five Factor Assessment. And the executives are also trying to look at these. But more importantly for you, if you can understand these five factors, agreeableness, conscientiousness, the extroversion, most companies think they're looking for extroverts, but that's a whole different story. Senior executives are mostly introverts. they're looking for people that are open and stable. But if you can understand your developmental needs and your weaknesses, it's easier then for you to make the adjustments to fit into an organization's culture. So that was the other piece I wanted to put in. So make sure you do something and don't be afraid to look at yourself in a very, very deep way to understand who you are and where you're strong at. I don't want you to focus necessarily on your weaknesses, but understand what they are. Because your weaknesses are not going to hurt you. Your strengths are what's going to propel you to success, right? But you need to...
Can you give us spell that website for everyone so that if they wanted to go and take that quick assessment for those five things, they know where to go find that?
Well, yeah, they'll have to come through me. So they'll have to just email me at Roy at WCandMgroup.com.
Okay.
So, yeah, as a PhD, I have to set it up for you, and you can take that assessment. But it's important that you understand who you are and so that when you're prepping for these interviews, you'll know where you need to prep more or where you need to spend your time to make sure you're fit. But, again, yeah, that's Roy at WCandMgroup.com.
Okay, I have another question for you.
Sure.
Yes, we'll share that again towards the end. What kind of skills are the leaders looking for in the candidates when they're making a leader selection? We were talking about the individual preparing to be interviewed, knowing how to prepare for it. So now we know how to prepare for it. We know where to reach you to help find those five things, those five skills. So what skills are the leaders looking for in the candidates when they're going, I'm making a leader selection?
Yeah, so it's real, we kind of went through those a bit. So they're still, they're conflicted a bit. So they think they're looking for, they think they're looking for this cultural fit thing that they find it very difficult to explain, but I talked about earlier what they're really trying to do. They think they're looking for this personality style, assuming that obviously you've already met the education and experience, right? So they think they're looking for those two, but so you have to demonstrate that you're a cultural fit and that your personality is a fit for an organization to be able to get in. But to maintain that job and to keep that job, Yvonne, you have to prove that you're collaborative and that you're a team player. That's the number one reason that most individuals leave because they're not. Now, I want to just throw one other thing that you and I didn't talk about, and that is when we talk about this education, we didn't really get into education that much. If I can, just a second, talk about that. Education is not as important today as it was for a period of time. It's starting to, unless you have an education from an Ivy League school. But here's the ironic part of this Ivy League school. During my research, there were six or seven of the executives that hired, not much vetting, just because they had an MBA from Harvard University, they gave them a job. And every one of those situations, those individuals failed. And they failed because they were not collaborative, and they were not team players because Harvard teaches people how to debate more than anything else, and they're not looking for debaters in those executive roles. So I wanted to just get that piece in there. But those are the same skills that we've talked about, that you've got to prove that you can't just be yourself when you go for these interviews. I know we're always talking about you be yourself. But if you go and interview for an executive position, a senior executive position at a Fortune 500 company, you can be yourself as much as you can, but you've got to also be that culture. You've got to also be that personality fit that hiring manager is looking for. You know, if you can do that, I don't care if you're black, you're a lady, you're whatever, you're going to have a good chance of getting hired because it's not always about race that we think it is, a bias. It's about us adjusting our personality to fit in that organization initially, and then once you're in, become collaborative and team player.
I have another question. Now that you mentioned
okay.
the hiring managers, what should these hiring managers do now to ensure that their decision-making process is not biased when they're selecting leaders?
Well, there's several things that they should do, and it's important that it's kind of contrary to what they normally do. So one of the things that for a senior executive position, you're probably going to go through some type of psychological assessment, PDI or something like that. I argue and suggest to these hiring managers that actually they should go through some type of assessment before they make the final decision, right? They should go through an assessment with some type of leadership coach or decision-making coach to ensure that the decision they're about to make about this executive direct report is not biased, is not prejudiced in some way, that they're really looking at this individual in a more rational way versus looking at these individuals intuitively like so many do. Because when you're assessing soft skills, like we talked about, the cultural fit, when you're assessing skills around personality, you're really doing it intuitively. I mean, and that can be a systematically flawed way to make a decision. So how can you become more rational? These organizations need to make sure that they explicitly describe their culture in writing. And none of these organizations had anything about what their culture really was in writing anywhere. So they need to do that. The hiring manager needs to challenge their decision-making process. And, you know, as we talked earlier, most of the research has been done about the outcome of decisions, not the process. They need these executives, Yvonne, even when they made a mistake, even when they selected executive direct report that failed, and many times failed within the first year, they continued to interview using the same methodology and process that they had previously used, making no adjustments, simply saying to themselves that, you know what, I must have missed something. I just didn't ask the hard enough this question in the right way, versus changing the entire process of how they're conducting the interviews. Because, you know, in most cases, the individuals they hire are successful, but it seems to be systematically flawed when they're interviewing and hiring minorities and women for these executive positions. And that's because they don't adjust the process. So those are the things I would say. Make sure you challenge your decision-making process. Get some type of expert to look at your decision before you make that final decision. And finally, make sure that you are, as a hiring manager, that you are collaborative with your team, that you really listen to your team, and hopefully someday we'll have diverse C-suite executives so we're not in the same mindset, that can challenge your decision if there seems to be some type of bias in your final decision. But those are things. I really think this whole notion of having an expert help you make that final decision is pretty important.
I completely agree with you. I completely agree with you. And we're getting up to the top of the hour, but I wanted to squeeze in a little bit of time to talk about your book that I purchased that's for children, called Wrong, Trump Ethics for All Ages. What's that about?
Yeah, it's interesting. I after the election, like so many of us, I was frustrated, and I was sitting there, and I told myself I could either sit here and be angry and stew and fuss, or I can let some steam out by doing something that can be a little bit humorous at the same time have some type of a real meaning. And you know, toward the end of that little book, I try and give some compare some of the statements and some of the behaviors of Mr. Trump to our Constitution to show that he is in direct opposition based on some of his behavior to our Constitution, and so that was really the reason for it, and it's actually done pretty well, especially in some of the like in Mexico and some of the other parts of the world. But it was really more of a fun project. If you're looking for a serious read, it's not a book that, you know, that you're going to sit down and you're going to by the fireplace, and it's just something you're going to flip through, give you a little bit more of insight and help you to. If you're similar to me, help you to cope with what's going on in the next 4 years, I think it's a good little book for that.
Yeah, I bought that good little book, so I know exactly what you mean.
I've got another one.
I've got another
book coming out toward the end of the month, first part of next month, that I'm really excited about, and it's a. Just about a 300-page book, and the title of it is is Misled, Hidden Colors of America. And in that book, one of the things I want to leave as a legacy is my life story to some degree. And so each chapter talks about a period in my life, and it talks about the challenges that I had, what I did wrong. I'm pretty open about that, and what I should have done differently. And at the end of each chapter, I give a 1 or 2 page review suggesting how others could be better, in particular African American males, how they can be better at living their life, how they could do things differently, how they can become what they really want to become in life. And towards the end of the book, I really get into the last 2 chapters. I get into our social system, and I talk about our justice system. And how we need to try and understand our capitalistic system. One of the things that I've found, Yvonne, is that when people come here from other countries, whether it's Middle East or the Asian countries or whatever, in general, they know more about our Constitution and our capitalistic system than we do, and we've been here forever, right?
I completely agree. I'm one of them because I came here from Jamaica, and I had to learn it in order to become an American citizen. Yeah,
that's right, and you've done well with it because you understand it. But too many of us, we've never engaged in understanding how our systems work, and so I talk about that to a great degree in the book. But the most exciting thing about this book, and I'm really excited about it, explains how in about the year 2050, the African American people will be the most powerful voting bloc in this country. But we have to start preparing for that year now. No one can be elected as a president or as a national leader in our country without carrying the African American vote. You know, we've got to get our young brothers, too many of them, not all, we got to get them in the mindset of preparing for a powerful, very powerful future. And so that's what that book is about. It's pretty exciting.
Okay, good. Great, because that is something that we can all look forward to. Now, we have about 3 minutes left. Do you have any final comments for our authors or anything for our listeners?
Yes, I do. And thanks for asking, Yvonne. So if you're interviewing for if you want an executive position, there does not have to be an opening in the organization you want to work for. But if you identify an organization that has the culture, that has the types of team members that you'd like to work with, research that organization, start to develop an interviewing strategy, and your resume should also mirror what that organization is about. And whether they've got an opening or not, you can possibly get a job in the organization. If they see you as a fit from their view of organizational fit, personality, and if you've got the background experience, you can get a job in an organization even if they don't have an opening. And that's a fact. That's a fact. So I want to mention that. And finally, please, stay with me. I'm on LinkedIn, Roy Whitmore, LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, you name it. I gave you my email earlier, and you can also reach me at www.cnmgroup.com and watch my blog. I blog about once a month or so, some exciting things.
Okay, great. Thank you very much for being a guest on the show today. And my thanks to all of you for joining us today for the Find Yourself, Live Your Dreams, and Be Happy show. Join us again next month on the second Saturday at 2 p.m. Central Time. Until then, let me leave you with these final words. Marla Gibbs said, "I truly believe that everything that we do and everyone that we meet is put in our path for a purpose. There are no accidents. We're all teachers. If we're willing to pay attention to the lessons we learn, trust our positive instincts, and not be afraid to take risks or wait for some miracle to come knocking on our door." So remember to find yourself, live your dreams, and be happy, and follow the show at www.blogtalkradio.com/Yvonne-F-Brown. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, Yvonne. Thanks for having me.